Actually, it's mentioned that everyone in this world will cry. There are different types of people who cry. One type of person will cry. They are called the samsarika. They are caught up in the cycle of birth and death, and therefore they're trying to be happy in this world. But when you try to be happy through material things, you will cry. So one type of person cries because they are caught in material life trying to be happy. Another person is a spiritualist who is crying to be connected back to the original place from which they came. And so they say the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra is like the cry of a child for the mother. And therefore, those people are also crying, but they're crying for something else. And then there are the perfected spiritualists who are already with Krishna, and they are also crying, but they're crying tears of joy. So ultimately in this world, but I will endeavor not to cry into the mic, but the higher theological meaning of your concern is that ultimately everyone is crying in the world. It just depends what you want to cry for. Either you can cry for Krishna, or you can cry for the other things of this world. One of our teachers, Madhvacharya, he says, if you added up all the tears that people have shed for material things through lifetimes, there would be enough tears to fill up an ocean. So, if we ultimately have to cry, then we should cry to reach a place in which we'll be able to fulfill our inner longing. The Christian theologian C.S. Lewis says, if I find within myself a desire which no experience of this world can fulfill, then I must conclude I was made for another world. And so we are crying to be again connected back to that world. And it requires desperation, you see. In this world, nothing was ever achieved without desperation, without desire. When I joined the monastery, one of the parts of the deal was that you had to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning. So, you know, sometimes when the alarm goes off at 4 o'clock in the morning, you have like an existential crisis. What did I sign myself up for? Like, are you going to do this? But I was studying at university. I studied computer science and management. And so all of my other friends, they ended up working in the corporate world. So what happened one morning is I was waking up at 4 o'clock or trying to wake up. And at 4 o'clock, somehow or other, my phone went off. And it was one of my friends from university. And he said, I said, oh, wow, how's it going? He said, surprising you're awake at this time. He said, surprising you're awake at this time. We have a conversation at 4 o'clock in the morning. I said, I'm just about to wake up. He said, I'm just about to go to sleep. Like, what were you doing? He said, I was at my office all night. I was a project, and you know, I had to sit on the desk all night to do the project. And I thought, wow, so much determination, so much desire, so much dedication for a career. And then I kind of looked at my life and said, to wake up at 4 o'clock, I should also have some dedication, desire, and determination for something that is ultimately going to bring me something much greater. And so at that moment I thought, okay, maybe it's not so bad waking. I'd rather be waking up at 4 o'clock than going to sleep at 4 o'clock because I had to be on my desk all night finishing a job. Everything requires desperation. So yes, but you're right, the desperation is not just an audible desperation, it should ultimately be a desperation that comes from the heart. And so that is the situation. Okay, anyway, we won't talk much more about crying today. That was just a topical thing that was brought up. I was thinking what we could just discuss this evening. But maybe before I go into any kind of monologue, what I'm going to do is just ask you to turn to the person next to you and tell the person something that happened to you in the last week that you feel you didn't deserve. That when it happened to you, you felt like, why did that happen to me? Right? Just for a minute, I'll give you a minute. Just, and if you don't know the person next to you, don't worry, we're all about to find out.
No, because I have the realization that everything that happens, I deserve. So, nothing happened to me that I don't deserve. I'm responsible for all my actions where I did, and so I suffer for the consequences. So. For yourself?
Nothing comes to mind. Nothing major.
Yeah, I can't think of anything really.
Like you say, the philosophy helps, isn't it? We try to, like, we've got the knowledge of our karma and things, so it doesn't help at all.
We're more detached even when something is happening. We don't feel like it, you know.
Yeah. How did you get this realization? Was it through experience or just once you got the knowledge, like, you got the realization?
I think, through this time in the temple and the practicing during the year, I learned to... Yes, you also went to the Tamil lecture, you know. Whatever wave is coming, we are like on this boat. And yeah, we still have problems, but matters partial to Monte are we are detached and do our duty and we get up and chant.
Yeah.
For yourself?
Yes, it's on and off. It's like sometimes the knowledge is there. And I guess maybe when I'm in a higher mode, I can be more receptive to the knowledge and be more at ease. But sometimes I'm in ignorance where I forget the knowledge or, still sometimes think, how could this happen to me? What did I do to deserve this? So I'm still mixed in that sense. Not fully got the realization, but still a bit mixed. But it's there sometimes.
Nice, thank you.
Thank you.
Alright, thank you. Anyone want to say something, either your online or a confession of your neighbor, something that happened to you that you felt you didn't deserve? Something? Can be anonymous, no problem. Yeah, Philip, you want to say something?
That's okay.
You look a bit scared there. Okay, no problem. We don't want to make you uncomfortable. Yeah.
Did you mean it in a positive or in a negative way?
Do whatever came to your mind.
Okay.
Whatever came spontaneously. Anything? Something.
When you are in a queue and you wait that you can do something, and somebody steps inside and steps before you.
Yes.
And you want to say something, but you cannot because you think it's maybe unfair or something like that.
Yeah.
And so you let the situation, but inside it feels like it's eating you.
Right. That's like the British people are known for queuing up. It's like it's a cardinal sin to jump a queue. But yeah, when someone jumps a queue, they do have something called supermarket rage now. Someone jumps into the queue. Okay, so someone jumped the queue before you. That was not nice. Anything else? I mean, you didn't deserve that. Anything else? You were saying so many things to each other.
I would like to mention something positive. just adding to what Karuna said, I think there's so much of mercy when one can meet Krishna consciousness and also stay in Krishna consciousness. So that was coming into my mind.
So much grace, so much.
Somehow happy. How is this possible?
Yeah, so many nice spiritual things, so many grace, yeah. I did this exercise with the wrong crowd. whenever I do this with a normal crowd, like, people have plenty of things to say and plenty of negative things. Not that it's, you made a mistake, but it's interesting how generally when we think of things that happened to us that we didn't deserve, we generally always think of the bad things that happened to us. I lost my keys, or, you know, I had a health crisis, or someone criticized me for something I didn't do. And we generally think of bad things, but there are also plenty of good things that happened to us that also, if we're honest, we may not feel we deserve. But the real point here that I want to kind of discuss with everyone today is actually, in another sense, nothing happens to us in life which we don't deserve, because there is something called karma. And because karma is such an interesting topic, I thought, let us discuss a little bit about karma and maybe some of the main misconceptions that may be there about the law of karma. And then what I'm going to do is, I'm not going to speak too long, I'm going to really open this up quickly, and then hopefully we can have some good discussion amongst us. So yeah, karma is the mechanism, the law by which things happen to us in our life. They said there's a new restaurant downtown, and it's called Karma. And there's no menu, you get what you deserve. So, karma means that everything that's happening to us in life is happening for a reason, and is happening because of some prior activity that we performed. The Bhagavad Gita, which all of you may be familiar with, is a book in which five topics are described. I'm just going to read a little section from the introduction here of Srila Prabhupada's translation, where Srila Prabhupada says, "The five topics of the Gita consist of Ishvara, the Supreme Lord, Jiva, the living entity, Prakriti, nature, Kala, time, and Karma, activity." Yeah, so if you want to know, like, the Bhagavad Gita in a nutshell, these five topics explain the whole thing. How does the Bhagavad Gita begin? By knowledge of who we are. We're not this body, but we're the soul. We're a spark of consciousness animating this body. So that's the first topic, the jiva, who we are, the living entity. Then where is the jiva living? The jiva is living within the material world. So the material world is known as prakriti, or material nature. So we're living in this world, and this world has a certain influence on us, isn't it? When you walk down the street, or when you're in certain environments, it affects you in a certain way. So Krishna explains about how this world is created and how this world influences us. So that's the second topic. The third topic is, we're a soul and we're living in this world, but what are we doing in this world every single day? Activities. We're performing activities. No one does nothing all day. Everyone is always doing something. So the third topic of the Gita is karma, which means for every activity we perform, there's a subsequent reaction, and how the science of action and reaction works. So that's the third topic, karma. Now, the soul is living in the world, performing activities in the world. And in order to perform activities, what do you require?
Time.
Time, yeah. Without time, you can't do anything. So the fourth topic of the Gita is time. How does time work? What is the effect of time? How time is not a linear narrative, but how time is cyclical. These are very powerful concepts given in the Bhagavad Gita. And then outside of this whole material system is the fifth topic, which is God. And God, what is the nature of God? What is our interaction with God? And most importantly, what is the means of connecting with God, which is yoga. Right? So yoga comes from the Sanskrit word yuj, which means to connect. And so the Bhagavad Gita gives many processes by which one connects with God. And that, in a nutshell, is the entirety of the Bhagavad Gita. It explains everything about how this current world that we're living in functions, and it explains about everything which is beyond this world and how we ultimately connect to that reality. Srila Prabhupada goes on to explain, out of these five topics, the Lord, the living entities, material nature, and time are eternal. The only one of these five topics that's not eternal is karma, because karma can be eradicated. Karma is something that is existing in our life in order to bring us to a certain level of consciousness. And once we reach that level of consciousness, there's no need for the karma to function. And so, karma is an incredibly powerful concept, because the whole idea of karma is meant to uplift us. And if we understand the law of karma, not only will we feel no frustration in our life, but we will also become extremely enlightened, extremely wise, and extremely joyful, because we will be able to frame every single event, every single experience, and every single emotion in a context of a much greater reality. And we will just feel amazing, right? How many of you feel like sometimes life is like an emotional roller coaster? You wake up in the morning, it just takes something small, isn't it? You're just walking, you're having a great day, and then someone gives you like a funny look. And then it's like for hours, it's like it's just in your mind, like what is it? Something like a smell, like what is it? You know, like, we're so emotionally displaced by different things, we're so emotionally frail. So understanding karma and the science behind why things happen is very, very powerful. Okay, let me say a few more things and then I'm going to open it up. So please be ready with your questions about karma. But what I want to share with you today is that there are many misconceptions that are prevalent about karma. And these are misconceptions. Some of them are very simple misconceptions, but we can carry these misconceptions within our heart for a long time. And therefore, it's very powerful to know this. One of the first and main misconceptions of karma is that karma is unfair. Because how many people in the world look up at the heavens and say, why do bad things happen to good people? And really what they're saying is, why do bad things happen to me? Right? Did you know there's a whole study of philosophy based on this question called theodicy? Yeah? Why bad things happen in the world? Karma is seemingly unfair. Even when you read the philosophy of the Bhagavad Gita and karma, sometimes you turn on the television and you see things, and in your heart you feel, this is so unfair. So we have a kind of concept that karma is unfair. What the Bhagavad Gita trains us to do is to see life in a broader way. Karma is actually an extreme exhibition of God's mercy to enlighten and educate the living being. Karma is actually an incredible exhibition of compassion. Karma is actually a demonstration of love. But sometimes we look at the effects of karma and it doesn't feel very loving. But now let me share with you a formula. If you want to know the depth of Krishna's love, you can only know the depth of Krishna's love if you understand the length and the breadth of your existence. Okay? So this is the formula you have to remember. The love, the depth of Krishna's love equals the length and the breadth of your existence. And I'll explain what I mean. The first thing is that the length of the soul's existence is that this life is just a chapter. And whatever happens in this life is just one chapter of a longer story. So when you try to decode karma, but you only see one chapter of the story, then you don't understand how that event or experience is having an effect in the wider scheme of things. So if you want to know how Krishna or God is being very compassionate to elevate the living entity through karma, you have to understand that that karma is having an effect over many, many lifetimes. If you just look at something within one lifetime, it will confuse you. We also have to understand the breadth of our existence. Not only do we have a long existence, which spans over many lifetimes, but we have a breadth of identity, which means that we're a soul living within a material body. And generally, we only see how karma is affecting the material body. But Krishna may not always protect someone's body, but what they're doing is always protecting someone's soul. So when we look at someone and on an external level they seem to be suffering, we may not be able to appreciate how internally that is creating a great change within them, if we don't understand the breadth of their existence. That we're not just the body, we're not just even a mind, but we're a soul which is inhabiting the body and mind. So when people say karma is unfair, this is one of the biggest misconceptions people have, because they fail to realize the length and the breadth of our existence. And so what the Bhagavad Gita does is it opens up our vision to help us understand that there is a bigger narrative that's going on in this world. The second misconception, let me just build on that as well. Things in your life are not good or bad. Things in your life are an opportunity to learn. And that's the shift of consciousness we have to make. When something happens, we can either be in mode A, which is this is good or this is bad, and discriminating based on that. Or we can be in mode B, which is what can I learn from this? In life, when your basic mentality is a mentality of wanting to learn, then you will go beyond good and bad, and you will be able to see lessons which will ultimately help you to uplift your consciousness and find inner happiness. So karma is educational. But then the second misconception someone may say is karma, it may be educational, but you know what? It's confusing. Because how in the world, if karma is there to educate us, how in the world are we supposed to learn the lessons? What lesson am I supposed to learn if someone jumps the queue in front of me in the supermarket? It was my karma, okay, I accept it. But how am I supposed to learn what lesson comes from that? Every day things happen to us, how are we supposed to learn? We can't even remember the activity that caused us to get a certain reaction in this life. How can I learn? If I perform an activity and then I get a reaction to teach me, but by the time I get the reaction, I forgot the activity that caused it, what in the world am I going to learn? Right? Someone may say, it's confusing. I've just opened up a confusion that would take a long time to clear up, but let me give you some thoughts. Why do we forget the past activities which cause us to suffer now? The first thing is that Krishna arranges us for us to forget our previous identity, our previous activities. Why? Because if we never forgot our previous activities or our previous identities, we'd never be able to live in this chapter of life as a normal person. I mean, just imagine you're a man now and you're a woman in your previous life and you remembered the whole thing. It would create almost like an identity crisis, you know, it would be a little difficult. And so the way that the journey of the soul works is that the soul, when it enters a new body, it forgets the previous identity so that it can function in this identity appropriately. But then it leaves the problem that how do we learn? how do we learn from the activities that are causing us reactions now? There is still a way to learn, because you can decode your karma. You can decode your karma and understand what you're meant to learn from everything you're going through now. And you know how you decode your karma? Through spiritual books, through spiritual people, and through spiritual introspection. Through spiritual books, the books of wisdom like the Bhagavad Gita give you almost, they're like an x-ray machine which help you to see the deeper lessons that you're meant to learn behind things that are happening to you. Spiritual people are like an x-ray machine. They're able to show you things that you can't see in your own emotional chaos. And when you introspect and you pray within to be able to understand how you're supposed to evolve and elevate yourself from any given situation, from within you can also get inspiration to understand the lessons that you're meant to learn. So the second misconception, if someone says that karma is confusing, is not confusing, because karma can be decoded, but there is a certain process and a way and means to do that. Another misconception about karma is that karma eliminates free will. Have you heard this one? Someone may say, if everything that's happening in my life is a result of karma, then where's my free will? I don't have free will anymore. But that's not exactly what the Bhagavad Gita teaches. The Bhagavad Gita says that you're getting karma from your past, but what that karma is doing is it's simply creating the stage for your present. But now you're on the stage, you have free will to decide how you want to act now. Within that stage, you can't change the body you've been given. That's a result of karma. You can't change the family that you have. That's karma. You can't, you know, some people can't change a lot of their material things. Have you noticed? Like, some people, money just comes to them. They can be lazy, lethargic, irresponsible, you know, and somehow money just keeps coming to them. And then you got another person who's like working like a donkey, right? Working hard, but somehow money does not come. So there is a certain karma that we're working with, and there's only so much you can change that karma. But does that mean my whole life is predetermined? No. Because that just creates the context. And then within that context, you have complete free will to decide what you want to do within that context. And how you then utilize your free will determine what your next destination will be. So karma does not annihilate free will. Rather, life is an interplay of karma and free will. Yeah? On one hand, people think everything is determined. Incorrect. On another hand, people may think everything is completely open and free will. Incorrect. Life is an interplay of both. Like, say, for example, there was this book by Rhonda Byrne, The Secret. Anyone read it? Secret. Law of Attraction. So it's a very interesting book, and there's many, many wonderful things in there. But still, it's not a fact that we can attract anything we want. Because we see practically life just doesn't work like that. It's a nice concept, it's a mouth-watering concept that you can attract whatever you want, that the universe is vibrating at a certain energy. And if you within yourself vibrate at the same energy, then you will attract, because like attracts like. It's a nice concept. But some people try as hard as they may, some things will not come to them because it's not karmically meant for them. But that's okay. That doesn't mean they can't be happy. That doesn't mean they can't be successful. It just means that in this world, there is a limitation to how much our free will changes things. But free will, we do have. So So this is another misconception people have in karma. Okay, there could be many, many more. So let me just kind of pause here and just summarize what I shared with you today so far, and then maybe see if there are some responses from you, and we can see where we go. So today, I opened up the fact that the Bhagavad Gita encompasses five topics. Yeah? Anyone want to shout out those topics for me?
Time.
Time. Jiva, the living entity, God of God, Prakriti,
time.
And Karma. That interactive exercise, I think, was more confusing. I should have done it in order. Living entity lives in the world, performing activities in the world, which requires time, and outside of the whole system is God. Out of those five topics, four are eternal. They continue on all the time. But one is not eternal. And the one that's not eternal is karma. Karma is just a temporary mechanism that's put into place in order to elevate someone's spiritual understanding. But in order for karma to elevate one's spiritual understanding, one must overcome certain misconceptions that are there about karma. One of the first main misconceptions about karma is that karma is unfair. But it requires us to broaden our horizons. Another main misconception about karma is that karma is confusing, because I don't know how to learn from my karma. But there is a way in which you can decode your karma. You just need the right tools and techniques. And the third misconception I talked about with regards to karma is that karma means there's no free will. That's also a misconception, because karma simply creates the stage, and within that stage, you have free will. So let me pause there and see whether there may be anything from your side that I've spoken about so far that you may want clarification on in terms of karma.
So did I understand correctly that how we react to the karma is key? Is that?
Yeah, how we react to the karma is the key, yes. Like, there were two boys who had an alcoholic father. So they followed these two boys who had an alcoholic father. And then they interviewed the two boys later in their lives. One of them became an alcoholic himself. And the other one became a teetotaler. You know, it means he didn't have one drop of alcohol in his whole life. So they put a mic in front of the son who became an alcoholic, and they said, "Why did you become an alcoholic?" And he said, "I grew up with a father who was an alcoholic, and I watched him my whole life." So that was clear. Then they brought the person who didn't have a drop of alcohol in his whole life. "Why did you never touch a drop of alcohol in your life?" "Because I grew up with a father who was an alcoholic who I watched my whole life." Which was an interesting point, because it was almost like they went through exactly the same thing. They went through exactly the exact same thing. But because they received it in a certain, with a different perception. There's one in the Bhagavatam, which is our greater work of theology, which spans 18,000 verses. In the later parts of the Bhagavatam, there's an outpouring of realization from one personality called the Avanti Brahmana. And he says in a beautiful, he kind of reflects on his whole life, and then he says this beautiful verse in Sanskrit. I'll share it with you because it's beautiful. He says in Sanskrit, "Nayam jano me sukadu kahetur na deva tatma griha karma kalaha mana param kalanma mananti samsara chakram parivartayayat." He looks at his life and he reflects, "Why did I suffer in my life?" And then he says, "Nayam jano, I used to think that other people were the cause of my suffering. I was wrong." Nadevadatma. Later on, I thought that maybe the gods were the cause of my suffering. I was wrong. Graha. Later on, I thought that maybe the astrological planets were the cause of my suffering. I got bad astrology. I was wrong. Karma. Later on, I thought maybe karma was the cause of my suffering. I was wrong. Hang on, karma wasn't the cause of your suffering. What was the cause of your suffering? Mana, param, karanam, amananti. The param, karanam, the ultimate cause of my suffering. Mana is my own mind. The mind is the cause of the suffering. Because according to the state of one's mind, one will then decode everything else that is happening in your life. Therefore, even in the English world, they say, isn't it? It's all in the mind can make heaven out of hell and hell out of heaven. Even Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Bhandurātmyat manasasya yenat mayavat manājita anātmanastu satrutve vartitak meva satruva. For one who has conquered the mind is the best of friends, but for one who has failed to do so, the mind will remain the greatest enemy. And therefore, you know, sometimes when I'm going through a town like cities, like Zurich, it's like there is a gym which is opening up on every corner. Have you noticed? Like so many gyms to train the body, and I'm not against the gym. It's good. I need to go to the gym. But sometimes I feel like, imagine if there would be gyms for the mind to help people train their mind. Imagine how beautiful the world would become if people would learn how to control their mind. You know, once I go up and down the country in London, the UK, and I distribute spiritual literature, we stop people on the street. And so I stopped one man once in Oxford during the university years. So he was interested, he took a book, and then I said, okay, what's your story? He said, I just got out of jail. So I couldn't resist. I said, what'd you do? So I was in jail for 6 years. I said, what'd you do? He said, I was on a night out with my girlfriend and we flagged down a taxi. So, you know, like when you flag down a taxi, the taxi stops like, you know, 20 meters up there. So anyway, the taxi stopped, so he was walking up to this taxi and somehow or other, as he was about to get into the taxi, another guy walked into the taxi. He, like, he took his taxi. How could he, you know? And this person, he said, I don't know what happened to me. I just saw red. And I just went into a rage. You know, it was also like a false ego thing, like a pride thing, because he was with his girlfriend and he didn't want to look. So he said, all of these. And then he just got into the taxi and he just punched this guy. And they got into a fight. And anyway, he got charged for grievous bodily harm, GBH. 6 years in prison. And he looked at me and he says, and he looked at me and he said, now you know why I'm buying this book, right? He said, I realized my whole life I put so much effort into my body, my possessions, creating the perfect life. And I realized I put no effort into training my own emotions. And you know what? 6 years ago, I realized that because I didn't put any effort into training my emotions, how much it cost me in my life. And so he said, now I'm just learning to train my mind. Everything else is secondary. And even the social science realized that after some time, because they used to think that the people with the highest IQ were the most successful and happy people in the world. You know, intelligence quotient? Later on, they realized you can have the highest IQ, but if you don't have EQ, if you don't have emotional quotient, if you don't have the ability to control your emotions, to relate to people, to navigate difficult situations with a steady mind, you can have the highest intelligence in the world, but you won't be able to harness it, because when your emotions go out of balance, your intelligence goes out the window. So they said IQ without EQ, pointless. And you know what social scientists are saying now? It's not only IQ, it's not only EQ, but you know what it is now, right?
SQ.
Spiritual quotient. That the most happy and successful people in the world are not the ones who have the highest IQ, not just the ones who have the highest emotional quotient, but the ones who have spiritual quotient. The ones who know deeper identity, the ones who have bigger purpose, the ones who have a broader vision of life and something more than the material that they're aiming for. Anyway, sorry, I went off the point there. But yeah, just the mind. Why don't you start seeing how that? Yes.
Babu, and where's the line between to accept everything that is happening to us and say, oh, this is my karma, I cannot do anything, and then to really try to change something. Like we have now maybe a bad job or some situation in our life, and especially in India we say, oh, that's my karma, I cannot do anything, and yeah.
You can only know that something is your karma after you've done everything in your power, and then it still happens. Like, if you don't wake up in the morning to go to work and then you get fired. I mean, you can't say it's your karma, right? Because, like, it doesn't look like you gave 100% to make it work. But if somehow or other you give 100% to making it work, and still somehow or other the boss comes in the next morning as well, what to do, there are redundancies and you're first on the fight. You know, okay, well, what to do? Let's accept it and move on. So it means that in our life, karma, this could also be another misconception of karma. Thank you, I'll add it to my list when I give the next talk. Another misconception of karma is that karma means I don't have to endeavor, or I don't have to act, or I don't have to put in effort. No, that's not what karma means. Karma means you put in your effort, you put in your endeavor, but at a certain point you realize I've done everything I can do, and whatever now comes as a result, I accept it as higher arrangement and something that I'm meant to learn from. Does that make sense? So in karma, the detachment comes after the endeavor. The detachment doesn't come before the endeavor. If your detachment comes before the endeavor, you're in problems. But the detachment comes after the endeavor. That I've done the best I can, and now whatever happens, obviously there's a higher purpose why it's happening. Make sense? Yes.
Thank you. Just I wanted to know how to differentiate and understand between the when the Lord wishes to take the tests of his pure devotees and the karma on the pure devotees. For example, like in the life of Srila Prabhupada, I can't imagine the things if we can look at from material perspective, the sufferings what he was going through cannot be his karma. It was the arrangement and of the Lord. So how to differentiate between and how to understand God?
There are, broadly speaking, two types of spiritualists. One is a perfected spiritualist and one is a practicing spiritualist. In Sanskrit, the two names for this are a sadhaka, who is a practitioner, and a siddha, one who is perfect. Now, the interesting thing is when you look at both categories of spiritualists, they both go through difficult situations. I mean, Srila Prabhupada came on a ship to America at the age of 70, and he got two heart attacks on the ship. And you kind of look at Krishna and you think, Krishna, I mean, help him out, you know? I mean, They're just coming to do your job, you know, like help them out. It's said that the perfected spiritualist goes through suffering in order for two reasons. Firstly, to glorify their greatness even more. And secondly, to give the practicing spiritualist an example of how to react to suffering. So when they go through suffering, someone like Srila Prabhupada is for those two purposes, to bring out the glory of his devotion and to give everyone else an inspiration and an example of how to deal with suffering. Yeah? And when a practicing spiritualist goes through suffering, then what Krishna is doing is taking the karma, but then dispensing it to that person in their life in such a way that it will give them an opportunity to spiritually elevate themselves. Now, for most of us, of course, we can't judge each other, but generally we can say most of us will be in the category of practicing. And so we can understand that whatever suffering we're going through is because we have some karma to experience. It's not because of some higher purpose. However, we can rest assured that that karma is coming to us, as I said, very deliberately. And all we have to now do is have the strength of mind and the emotional stability to look at that thing that is happening in our life and to use it to elevate our consciousness, to learn the lesson. Don't just go through problems, grow through problems. Yeah. You learn problems.
Does that help? Yes.
This knowing gives us freedom and consolation, and the karma we suffer gives us compassion to others. This is also
very beautiful point. Yeah, when we Krishna sometimes also gives us karma because it also helps us to be empathetic towards other people and what they're going through. So karma and going through suffering, I realized in my life that there were people who were going through certain things. And try as I did to help them, I realized I couldn't really help them because I couldn't really empathize with what they were going through because I had never really gone through that in my life myself. And so sometimes Krishna gives all of us certain experiences and certain things to go through so that in the future we can help other people who are in that situation because we can empathize more deeply with them. So yes, that's a very beautiful positive that we can take from karma. Yes. Yes.
Hare Krishna. I joined a bit later, so I'm sorry.
Better late than never.
The whole point, I will think of whole picture, but I think just now you mentioned, so Krishna gives karmas at times also. But then it eradicates the whole theory that all karmas are being produced by the mind. What you were saying.
Krishna, what he will do is that he will take the karma that you have, but he will dispense it in a particular way in a specific way in order for that individual to advance. So the idea is that when you are beginning a spiritual path and trying to connect with Krishna, okay, let's say someone is not trying to connect to Krishna, then what they're experiencing in their life is automatic action and reaction. But the moment you try to start connecting with Krishna, Krishna becomes personally involved in your life. And what he does is he takes your karmic stock, but then he gives it to you in a very specific way that will give you great opportunities to advance.
Yeah. For example, a child being born in a war-torn country.
Yeah, it could be anything. I mean, everything. Krishna is not needlessly going to make us suffer. But what he's going to do is take whatever experiences are required and dispense them in a way that can create the most change. Thank you.
you maybe say a little bit about the methods of, not decoding karma, but like, can we actually become pure in one life, or is it also a process of pure lives, or if we want in one life, we'll be looking like an easy way, you know, because we do find attractive the spiritual world and all the lilas that we listen about, maybe something.
Yeah. Srila Prabhupada writes that advancement in spiritual life is dependent upon the attitude of the follower. So it really is up to us how much we are desirous, how much we want that spiritual reality. You see, spiritual life is like, you can use the metaphor of an ocean. You know, like when you go to the coast, there are some people who appreciate the ocean, but from the shore. They look at everyone having a good time. It's like, it's nice, they're happy there. And then there are some people who go to the edge of the shore and they kind of just like dip their feet in. And they're happy. And that's how far they go. And then there are some people who take a boat into the middle of the ocean. They're surrounded by the ocean, but they're still on the surface. And then there are those who jump off and go deep into the ocean. So Krishna consciousness is like an ocean. And do you want to see it as something beautiful but from a distance? That's option number one. Option number two is you can engage with it a bit in and a bit out. One foot in, one foot out. That's also nice. You can also engage with Krishna consciousness by being surrounded by it, but still remaining on a very superficial level. And then you can engage with Krishna consciousness by really doing deep introspection and real spiritual quality, absorption and meditation, and then navigate to the depths of it. So it really depends on our attitude. The goal of Krishna consciousness is ultimately to learn all the lessons we're meant to learn. Because Krishna says in the Gita, Yasya sarve samarambha kama sankalpa varjita jnanagni karma dagdanam tamahu pandita buddha. Who is a Buddha? We know the Buddha. A Buddha means an enlightened person. So what is an enlightened person? What is their characteristic? Jnana agni. They have embraced the fire of knowledge. And what knowledge? The knowledge that they have is like a fire, because what does it do? It burns up every last bit of their karma. Therefore, one has to invest time in really understanding knowledge, but not just understanding knowledge, internalizing knowledge. And not just internalizing knowledge, but then living that knowledge. And you know what? Not just living that knowledge, but sharing that knowledge with others. That's the complete circle. And if you do that, then that knowledge will become the fire. And that fire will burn up all of the karma. And because one has already learned all the lessons, so there's no more need for karma. So, can you do it in one life? You can do it in one moment. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada, he would say, he would make statements like, you've given so many lives to doing so many things in the material world, trying so many ways to be happy. Now just give one life to Krishna. And we almost think, like, one life? One whole life to Krishna? But if you look at it in the context of eternity, we've tried so many things already. Try one life to Krishna. Try one life for spirituality. And see what comes of it. Maybe something amazing. So yes, we can do it in one life. It's very much possible. But it's rare. Therefore Krishna says in the Gita, Manushyanam sahasreshu kashkit yadati siddhaye yaditam apisiddhanam kashkit manveti tatmata. What does Krishna say? Out of many, many thousands of people in this world, one may endeavor to become perfect spiritually. And out of many of those who endeavor, maybe one will make it. But let me now give you the bright side of it. There's 60 of us in this room, and what is the percent? How many people in Zurich?
400,000
something. 50,000. What's the percentage?
Nobody knows.
60 over 450,000. Anyway, you know what? You're all rare people. You're all special souls. So you've come this far already. It's already rare that you've come this far. So why not a little bit of an extra push, and you can make it in this life? You know, sometimes I think of Krishna consciousness, and I'll end on this point because I don't want to drag it too long. But you know, like in the Olympics, they do like marathon races, and then right at the end of the marathon race, they all come into like the stadium, and then they run around the track, and then there's like a bell, which is like the last lap. You know what, dear friends? We've been on a marathon through this universe for many lifetimes. And now we've come to the end of the journey, practically. We're on the final lap. The bell is ringing. The crowd are roaring. The finish line is in sight. And then, if you're in the crowd and you see this, and there's a person who's just about to finish the marathon and win it, and in the last lap, they're kind of like, oh, I'm tired. Like, come on, man. It's like you're right there. You're there. You're practically there. So yeah, sometimes we wake up in the morning and we think, I'm not inspired, I'm not infused. It's like Krishna consciousness is so hard and my beads are so heavy. And it's a struggle, right, to like pick it up. But we have to remember it's a great opportunity. And just some application now in the final lap. And amazing things can happen. Some thoughts. Yeah. Could I say one last thing? Is that okay?
Please.
Yeah. I'm a kind of an opportunist, you know, so I take the opportunity to... We've written a couple of books. I can't say it's my knowledge. I only tried to write a few things and share it maybe in a way that's practical for people. So if you would like, Lord Pasha, there's a couple of books. This book is just like reflections on, I guess, things I saw in life and how I felt it related to the Bhagavad Gita. So maybe something, if you'd like to read it. And this is a book which is a summary of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is Srila Prabhupada's, I guess you could say, his magnum opus, his main theological work. And what we try to do is just summarize it in one book with maybe some practical lessons and different things. It's not that if you read this, you don't have to read all 18 volumes. But the idea is that if you read this, maybe it will also give you some inspiration to read the other book. So if any of these you feel may be useful for you, then Prashant is here. And you can take one away and give a donation if you like. And just some humble offering to share with you. And otherwise, we invite all of you to come to London. I stay in London. Have any of you been to our temple in London? Some of you have even lived in our temple in London. So we have a beautiful place. It was donated by George Harrison, the Beatles. And you can come and spend some time. We even do a course like be a monk or be a nun for a week. So if you want to come, and you don't have to shave your head or anything, you can just come and spend some time with us and explore this beautiful tradition of spirituality. It's a great opportunity that we all have, and it brings a great inner quality to our life. So thank you so much for your kind attention and for being here today. Hare Krishna.
Thank you.